Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we, really get into some fascinating stuff. And today we are diving into something pretty juicy, a legal battle. Yeah, a legal battle between two giants you'll recognize.
Names you definitely know. This is Gillette versus Schick.
Yeah, the razor wars. And
Yeah.
yet, you might think, oh, razors, how interesting can that be? But trust me, this goes way deeper than just, shaving cream and sharp blades. It gets into like the really aggressive ways companies compete, especially when you've got like market leaders and challengers. And it's a perfect example of how the law steps in to make sure, everyone's playing fair when it comes to advertising. What claims can they make and what crosses the line? I mean, that's what truth in marketing is all about, right? And for our listeners, especially you law students out there, this case is, it's a classic.
Oh, it's textbook stuff. Schick Manufacturing, Inc. v. Gillette Co. It's like a crash course in competitive dynamics, right? And all the legal safeguards companies can use to, well, to protect themselves from false advertising.
And I think it's interesting how, legal action itself can be a competitive move, right? Especially when you've got one company that's clearly dominating the market.
For sure. And I mean, that's exactly the setup we have here. Early 2000s, Gillette was, I mean, they were king.
Yeah, they were king of the razor hill. What, like 90% of the market?
90%. Yep. Schick was trailing way behind with just 10%.
So, naturally, Schick was, looking for any edge they could get to gain some ground. But then in 2004, May 2004, Gillette rolls out this new razor, the M3 Power. And this is where, like, the legal fireworks start.
It all kicks off with the M3 Power, doesn't it? And those bold advertising claims that, well, ended up being the center of the whole dispute.
Yeah, so Schick didn't just, like, sit back and watch Gillette run away with this new razor. They saw an opportunity. What exactly was it about those M3 Power ads that really caught their attention?
Gillette was pushing this idea that the M3 power, it had these vibrations, right? And that those vibrations could actually raise hair up and away from the skin. And Schick, they jumped on that. They said, hey, wait a minute. That's not just, stretching the truth. That's straight up false advertising. They claimed Gillette was violating both the Lanham Act, that's the big one, and also the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act, CUTPA.
So they weren't messing around. I mean, they went for the legal jugular. What was their first move?
They went for a preliminary injunction, and this is a really key tactic.
Yeah, for those who maybe aren't as familiar with legal terms, can you break down exactly what that means?
Sure, a preliminary injunction, it's like hitting the pause button. You're going to court and saying, Judge, we need to stop this action right now before it causes more damage. And in this case, the action they wanted to stop was those M3 power ads. It's a way to prevent harm while the whole legal battle is still playing out.
Makes sense. So you've got this dominant player, Gillette, being challenged by the underdog, Schick. And the first shot fired is this preliminary injunction. So, like, what are the legal hoops you got to jump through to get one of those? What does the law actually say about false advertising?
All right, well, for Schick to win that injunction, they had to tick a few boxes. They had to convince the court that, one, if those Gillette ads kept running, they'd suffer irreparable harm. And two, they had to show that they had a good shot at actually winning the whole case, that their claim of false advertising was strong, or at least that there were serious legal questions and that, the odds were in their favor.
It's not just crying wolf. You gotta back it up with some serious legal muscle. Now, when we talk about false advertising, you mentioned the Lanham Act. What part of that law is the linchpin here?
The key here is Section 43A of the Lanham Act. That's the part that prohibits any false or misleading description of fact, and this has to be in commercial advertising or promotion. And this is where it gets really interesting, because the law distinguishes between two types of claims, literally false claims and then just misleading ones.
Oh, yeah. And understanding that difference is huge in this case. So, what's the difference? How do you tell them apart? And why did it matter so much in this particular fight?
Okay, so literal falsity, like it's black and white. The claim is just plain wrong. There's no two ways about it. Like, imagine a razor company saying their razor has five blades when it clearly only has three. That's literal falsity. Another example, and this comes up in our case, is if a company makes a claim based on testing or data, but that data doesn't actually support the claim. Now, a misleading claim, that's trickier. It might be technically true, but it still gives consumers the wrong idea. It leads them astray.
So if Schick could prove that Gillette's razor's hair claim was literally false, not just misleading, what advantage would that give them in court?
Proving literal falsity is like having a legal trump card. It shifts the burden of proof. Schick wouldn't have to go to all the trouble of showing how consumers were actually being deceived, like through surveys and stuff. Instead, the pressure would be on Gillette to prove their claim was true, and that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, you're basically flipping the script on them. So what did Schick do to build their case? What kind of evidence did they bring to the table?
Well, they didn't just sit around. They did their homework. Between May and October of 2004, they ran their own independent tests on the M3 power. And this is interesting because, you know, before they even filed the lawsuit in the U.S., they'd already gone after Gillette in Germany over very similar advertising claims. And they won an injunction there in November 2004. So they came to the U.S. case, which they filed in January 2005 in the District Court for the District of Connecticut, with some prior wins under their belt.
Oh, wow. So they had some international experience battling it out with Gillette over these claims. That's fascinating. What specific evidence, though, really grabbed the court's attention in the U.S. case? What did Schick present that made a difference?
A couple things stand out. First, Gillette's own internal testing came back to bite them. You see, their studies actually showed that the M3 power, on average, only extended hairs by about 10%. But their ads, especially those animated ones they were using, those made it look like the hairs were, like, standing straight up, a much bigger effect. The court zeroed in on that discrepancy, saying, hey, your own data contradicts what you're showing people.
Yeah, that's a pretty big oops. It's hard to claim you're being truthful when your own research tells a different story. What else did Schick use to build their case?
They also took aim at Gillette's claim that the M3 power could actually change hair angle. And after looking at the evidence, the court basically said, note Gillette, you don't have the science to back that up. Oh, and there's another little wrinkle. Gillette tried to argue that Schick waited too long to sue about 6 months after the M3 power launched. But the court bought Schick's explanation. They said, look, it took time to do our own testing, and we were busy fighting that other lawsuit in Germany.
Interesting. So they're juggling multiple legal battles. All right, so with all that evidence laid out, what did the court decide? Did Schick get their preliminary injunction?
They did, but only partially. The court specifically stopped Gillette from saying the M3 power raises hair up and away from skin, and that its vibrations make hair stand up. You know, those exaggerated animations really hurt them there. The court basically agreed that those specific claims were probably literally false.
But it sounds like Schick didn't get everything they wanted. There were some claims where the injunction was denied, right?
That's right. Schick had also challenged those more general claims about hair extension. But the court said, not so fast. They didn't grant the injunction for those broader claims. And their reasoning was, Schick hadn't really proven those statements were likely false. Remember, the burden of proof is on Schick, and the court wasn't convinced they'd met that burden for those wider claims.
So it's all about the specifics.
Yeah.
The court really focused on the claims that could be measured and tested, and then showed how Gillette's own data didn't match up. But for those vaguer claims, it was a different story. This is really interesting stuff. So zoom out for a second. What does all this mean for the world of advertising and, you know, the laws around false advertising? What are the big takeaways?
This case, I mean, it's a big deal. It shows just how important it is to have rock solid evidence for any claim you make in your ads, especially if you're talking about specific benefits that scientists can test. If you're exaggerating, like with those animations, well, you're asking for trouble.
You're playing with fire. It also highlights that while there's some wiggle room for puffery, those general over-the-top claims everyone knows aren't meant to be taken literally, that wiggle room disappears when you start making very specific claims. And especially if those claims are tied to science or research and you're caught, you know, fudging the data.
Exactly. And this case, it also shows how smart it can be for competitors to use preliminary injunctions. If your rival is running ads that you think are misleading or false and, you know, they're hurting your business, getting a court order to stop those ads can be a really powerful move.
And it protects your brand, right?
I mean,
false advertising can do a lot of damage in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
It's also worth noting that the court was totally on board with the idea that in this kind of head-to-head competition, losing market share can be a real lasting harm. That seems like a big deal for anyone in the competitive industry.
Absolutely huge. That recognition that a competitor's false advertising can cause irreparable harm by eating into your market share, it makes it easier for companies to get these preliminary injunctions. And that makes it a much more effective tool.
So what really struck me is how much attention the court paid to the details. Schick couldn't just say, oh, those Gillette ads are misleading. They had to pinpoint exactly which claims were literally false and then use Gillette's own data to prove it. That's impressive.
Yeah, that focus on literal falsity, especially when the company's own research contradicts them, that's a big deal. It gives other companies a strong legal argument under the Lanham Act, and it sets a precedent for just how accurate your advertising has to be, especially when you're talking about, like, measurable benefits.
This has been a really insightful look at a really important case. As we wrap up our deep dive here, we want to leave you with something to think about. The court made a clear distinction between claims they saw as literally false and those broader claims where they said no injunction. So for all our listeners, but especially for those of you in law school or thinking about a career in marketing or advertising, here's a question. When you're in a cutthroat market, how do you walk that line between creating persuasive advertising and, you know, straying into misrepresentation? How much wiggle room do you have? And how might a case like this change how consumers see advertising and whether they trust it in the future?
Those are the big questions. We all want effective marketing, right? Uh-huh. But it has to be done ethically and legally. And that means being honest, especially when you're basing your claims on scientific data or using imagery that might, you know, embellish the truth. What's at stake here is brand credibility and consumer trust. And in the end, those are things you can't put a price tag on.